Howdy, everybody. Welcome back to Reading Heathens, the unholy and wholly uninformed Bible study podcast. I'm your host, Adam B., here with your other host, Daniel T. Daniel, what's your day been like today?
Well, I slept in this morning to a good old 10 o'clock. I slept in, had some weird dreams about people not adhering to coronavirus regulations, and I was saying I was going to talk to the human resources and get them in trouble for not wearing masks.
Daniel, I like that you, even in your dreams, you take the appropriate bureaucratic routes. Yeah. That fits hand in hand with the stuff we're reading in the Bible right now.
Well, I have to deal with that daily. I have to remind dummies that they have to wear masks so I don't die. I had a great morning. I cut up some Vienna sausages and fried them with some eggs and had that for breakfast.
That sounds good.
Yeah. It was actually interesting. Here in California, right when kind of things were starting, people got a little crazy, just like everywhere in the world, but over here a little crazy, and were panic buying. And so we were at the grocery store trying to get what we could, and we weren't really panic buying, but I did make a joke. I was like, oh, let me grab a couple of these Vienna sausages. I was like, been living off those for years. You know, like, that'll be fine. And once somebody else heard me say that, and there were full rack of sausages. I grabbed like 3 cans and put them in my bag. Some dude heard me say that, and he himself grabbed 3 or 4 cans. I started a run on Vienna's in the grocery store.
You started a rush on one of the lesser meat products known to man.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of an interesting mini social experiment I feel like I started, where I made people panic buy sausages. And they're very loosely sausages. I mean, to call them a sausage is like kind of a joke. It's really you took a different kind of spam and you put it in a different shape. You know,
you said loosely sausages, but my brain immediately went to just loosely filled sausages. Like, you know, there's too much casing and the meat is just kind of rolling around.
See, I immediately thought of loose leaf sausages, right? Like, you know, it's just little chunks of sweet meat that you drop in a kettle to brew your sausage water.
I'd love it if it were like you pulled out full sheets of that loose leaf sausage and kind of dropped it in pots. Well, Daniel, this podcast is a social experiment every week as you and I try to suffer through conversation with ourselves, and our guests try to rescue us from our ineptitude. Luckily, today on the podcast, our friend Matt is back with us.
Hey, Matt,
how you doing, Matt?
I'm okay. am I supposed to pretend like a week has passed?
Yes. And we're going to stop the podcast now. We're going to restart it, and we want you to use some of those acting skills you say you have to act like this is next week.
Listen, man, I'm not that kind of actor.
Well, actually, Matt, on our, it's a bit of a tradition for the second showing of someone to come to this podcast. We like to ask them about their history with the Bible. As long as you're comfortable with getting into it.
Yeah,
we usually ask before we actually hit record if somebody's comfortable, but not the.
Oh, I thought we already covered that in the last episode.
Well, we did kind of. I don't know. I'm just sticking to it. I don't have any other things to do, talk about on this podcast. So I was just going to ask formally.
I can be a little more explicit about it if you want me to.
Yeah, your call, man.
Yeah, so have you guys seen that horror movie, The Witch?
I did, but I don't remember much of it.
So when the dad and the little boy are walking into the forest, and the dad is doing the catechism with his son, where he's like, "Wast thou born a sinner, boy? And he says, "Aye, Father, I was born a sinner." that is the tradition that I grew up in. That's like straight out of the Dutch Reform Catechism. And so, yeah, I grew up a pilgrim. That was sort of the idea.
You mentioned briefly
That's real healthy.
You mentioned briefly last episode, you said something about growing up Calvinist, and I had a buddy who was that, and it was always kind of very interesting to hear someone talk about that.
Yeah, well, you know, I've blacked out many nights since I was a Calvinist, and so my grasp of their theology is not what it once was. My mother really is a lay theologian in her own right. She, you know, when I was very young, we were just your sort of standard Southern Baptist, and then my mom started getting deeper and deeper into Reformation theology, and we joined a church who is part of it's the Reformed Church of the United States or the Reformed Church of America. It's weird because one is evangelical and one is mainline, and they were in the evangelical one. And so the Reformed Church takes their theology from John Calvin, who, you know, was in communication with Martin Luther sort of all at the same time. And some of the core tenets of their belief is that God, in his mighty all-powerfulness, before time even began, knew exactly who he was going to save from eternal damnation. You know, that's the doctrine of predestination, which is actually, I think, a little more present in most theology than people really realize. And, you know, the idea is that you're saved by grace alone. There are no works that you can do to get you out of that bind. That grace is achieved through belief in Christ and all that stuff. And honestly, the more I think about it now, the more, at the time, I thought we were really different, because that was sort of the attitude. Not in really like a holier than thou way. It was just a tradition that was sort of not as popular as it once was, and that bred in me sort of this idea that my family's beliefs were very, very strange. But they actually, the more time I've spent talking to people who grew up in all sorts of Protestant traditions, the more I've begun to realize that, you know, it's just a little stricter version of the pretty standard stuff that everybody believes.
Yeah.
I do, to lend credence to you feeling like a weirdo, Matt, I thought you guys were weirdos when I was a kid.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, again,
I was like, what the hell? I was like, well, then why bother doing anything? Why shouldn't I just be out doing whatever the hell I feel like if I'm saved by grace alone?
Well, and you grew up Methodist, right?
Yeah.
Methodists, Episcopalians, and Catholics, those were all sort of like the bogeymen. You guys definitely believed in different shit than we did. which, you know, it is funny now. I know I mentioned several times in the last one, I am still going through this many years long sort of weird, toxic love affair with the Catholic Church.
detangling one wire by dropping another in.
Yeah.
I find all of those very fascinating because I was... We were technically called General Baptists, but it was essentially Southern Baptists.
Wait, how many stars, Daniel?
A 4-star General Baptist. but, no, it where we had obviously had rules, but it was very much you didn't have to learn anything about theology. It was very simple. Like, it's not like people didn't want you to learn. It's just you didn't have to, in which people chose to not to most of the time. So it always is fascinating when people come from Southern churches, but they would still, like, you had to learn a lot about the theology, and you had to learn about the specifics and the minutia of what you're supposed to believe.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, while we were in the South, like, Dutch Reformed, that's really far more of a Yankee thing. Like, it's really popular in Michigan and stuff. And it was funny because the only reason that church existed is that there were so many Michiganian immigrants to Northwest Arkansas because of Walmart. And, and so
that's wild.
Yeah. So, like, I went to church with people from Michigan and Wisconsin, and their church was technically a mission. it was a Calvinist mission in Southern Baptist territory. And, you know, I always thought it was so wild, especially going to, you know, I was excommunicated from my parents' church, funnily enough.
Well, that seems like the story we want to hear.
Yeah. Well, I went to college, right? And my interest in theology was always there. And that never went away. That was always sort of the thing. Whenever I would get into, like, these screaming arguments with my parents about religion and stuff, and they'd talk about how I'd lost my way and everything, I'd say, you did this. You made me interested in it in the first place. And I started to discover, you know, sort of broader, more liberal interpretations of the Bible as myth and all of this stuff. And you know, got into things like process theology through a course that I took in school called Everything You Wanted to Know About Religion But Were Too Afraid to Ask. And
what were those questions that people were too afraid to ask?
I really don't know. That was sort of the sexy title that Norb Shedler, the professor, came up with, playing on Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Too Afraid to Ask, which was a book that was popular back when his ideas were really groundbreaking.
If the man wanted to sex up the title, he should have just put his name in the title of the course. Norb Schnerbler?
No, Norb Shedler. He really was a beautiful, beautiful man. A really, really wise and wild teacher to sit in a room with. He was just in the beginning stages of Parkinson's when I took this theology course with him. And watching him sort of embrace his lifelong study of religion and philosophy as a means of also dealing with this sort of deteriorative disease. I'm not sure if that's a word. But watching those two things at play was actually really wild. Those classes were like going to church. It was a pretty cool thing to be a part of. And it was the last time he taught the class. Then later on, I moved to Chicago and I got this letter from my parents' pastor, who was kind of going off the deep end at that point. And he was like, because we have to pay a certain amount for every member of our church to the synod in Michigan, and because you are no longer, that's right, in the letter, he blamed my college education. He was like, you went to college and you know, your faith in Christ was compromised or something like that. We can no longer consider you a member of this church. So I now I put it in the very dramatic terms of being excommunicated. But
yeah. I mean, that is a dramatic letter to get. Yeah. The fact that there was anything specific to your experience in that letter is what makes it pretty dramatic. It could have just been a form letter like, hey, you've been an active member of this church for this amount of time. Yeah. Sorry, we're taking you off the roster. Yeah.
I believe the words chosen apostasy were in there.
Damn.
But
you're going to have to make me Google shit.
Yeah, at that point, I had become an apostate.
Surprised you don't have that letter framed somewhere.
I held on to it for a long time, but I think I ended up burning it at some point. Or, you know, my flair for the theatrical overtook my sentiment.
Well, that's a shame. That would have made a great podcast cover. Is
my excommunication letter. Yeah.
Your heathen certification.
Well, you know, yeah. Funnily enough, that pastor got fired pretty soon after that for other reasons. Not for excommunicating me, probably was the last good thing that he did.
Well, you know, I'm going to cut that out. Listeners, I understand that I say well as an effort to transition about 30 times a podcast. I cut out the other 30. It's a habit I'm working on. But for now, in lieu of any kind of segue, we're going to take a look at Exodus chapter 23. This is we're going to keep reading out of the Knox translation. Because Matt, you turned us on to the Knox translation in the last episode, and
so
I'm enjoying it. It looks like we got a few asterisks to click on here on CatholicBible.online. And this is verse 1 of Exodus chapter 23. Never must thou take up a false cry or join hands with the guilty by giving false witness in their favor. Never must thou follow with the crowd and doing wrong, or being swayed by many voices so as to give false judgment. Even pity for the poor must not sway thee when judgment is to be given.
There's an asterisk there. I really want to explore.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't you fill us in on that asterisk?
Literally, this verse reads, "And thou shalt not pity," in the Hebrew text, "adorn the poor man in his judgment." Some think that there is an error of transcription, which has changed the word "great" into the word "poor," a difference of only one letter in the Hebrew. Whoa. So... So essentially what they're saying is, but if you know, please let us know. God.
I just love that they went that it's the exact opposite. Like the there's a whoopsie. We mean give no mercy to the poor, but it might be give no mercy to the great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like whoever translated this Bible was the Bible from Hebrew was just like, ooh, give no mercy to the great. I don't know if I like that much. Let's just do a little white out there. Change that letter.
Just squiggle.
Well, you know, I'd make the poor great again, man.
This is verse 4. If thou hast an enemy and finds his ox or his ass going astray, take it back to him. Dude, that sounds like a sweet dance, letting your ass go astray.
Go astray?
I don't know about a sweet dance. This is verse 5. Here is one that hates thee, and his ass has fallen under its burden. Do not pass by. Help him to lift it up. Do not give false judgment when the cause of the poor is tried. Keep clear of untruth. Do not bring death upon an innocent man that has justice on his side. I give no countenance to the wrongdoer.
So, you know, we've passed over several things at this point, right? Do not give false judgment when the cause of the poor is tried. So, like, you know, really screw those poor people in verse 3, but then automatically walk it back. But don't lie about them. and this one about do not bring death on an innocent man makes me feel really weird about our justice system.
God gives no countenance to the wrongdoer.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that. You kill an innocent man, God's not going to smile on you.
Yeah.
But he'll ignore you.
Yeah.
Verse 8. Beware of accepting bribes. They blind even the prudent and disturb the judgment of even just men. Do not oppress the alien. You know what it is to be an alien, since you yourselves were exiles in the land of Egypt. Listen, this was just in the last chapter.
Yeah,
what the hell?
He's really trying to hammer home a lesson that we still haven't learned.
this just sounds like I don't know, like either a Biden or Trump address right now, where it's like. It's so out of order. Like, none of this, all of this could have been bullet pointed in a much more efficient way.
Yeah, I really need Pope Francis to clarify this. I'm going to write a letter.
can we, as reading heathens, write a letter to the Pope about the great or the poor?
I think you should.
Yeah. We'll just run it through Google Translate into Italian, and I'm sure it'll come out great.
Ironically, gets translated where one word is backwards, and it destroys
it ruins everything.
Verse 10. For 6 years together thou mayest sow thy land and gather the crop from it. In the seventh year, leave it alone to lie fallow and give thy poorer neighbors food. All that is left, the wild beast may eat. And thou shalt do the like with thy vineyard and thy oliveyard.
So every 7 years, the new poor people who have come after the poor people who in the last 6 years starved to death are allowed to eat. Poor people are allowed to eat once every seven years.
It's generous.
I wonder if there are any farmers out there who have ever actually like adhered to this rule, because even the most like devout people don't quit demand that you quit farming for a year.
Yeah. They just rotate those crops. Mm-hmm. They need to let the land lie fallow. This is verse 12. For 6 days together, thou shalt do the tasks thou hast to do. And on the seventh, leave off working. So shall ox and ass of thine have rest. Homeborn slave and alien that works for thee, revive their spirits.
Well, this is great. This is you know, the first of labor law, right? Like
no, because we've actually had this exact same law given to us twice before in chapters just prior to this.
Well.
We have talked about how, like, the best thing about the formation of this religion is that, you know, the union rest days, the union holidays are pretty sweet.
Great. Yeah. As long as the union point has been made, I have no jokes left.
Don't worry. I already used that joke 3 or 4 times.
Awesome. Well,
it was my only joke, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, I don't even think it's a joke. It's just an observation.
Yeah. You know, God, again, a precedent for the AFL-CIO and every other, maybe not the IWW. We can't use any of that. I've decided it for you.
I'm picking up after the... Daniel, did you keep an eye on where I was?
Yeah, you're on verse 13.
Thanks, buddy. Observe all these commandments of mine and never take an oath by the names of alien gods. It's fucking sick. Or let such names be heard on your lips. Thrice a year, keep holiday in my honor. There is the feast of unleavened bread to be observed for 7 days in the first month of spring, the month of thy rescue from Egypt. Thou shalt eat unleavened bread in obedience to my command. Then thou shalt present thyself before me with gifts. The asterisk says, in obedience to my command. The latter part of this verse reads literally, thou shalt not present thyself before me empty-handed.
A direction which is awkwardly placed here, since it applies to all three feasts.
Okay. That's why they clarified it.
But you're going to come correct.
Bitch, if you approach me with empty hands.
Thou shalt be dealt with.
And this whole chapter right now just seems like recap. So far, none of these things are new, except for maybe the gift holiday. This is verse 16. And there is the feast of harvest, when the fields thou hast sown reward thy labor with first fruits. And another feast at the end of the year, when the last of thy crops has been gathered in. Thrice then in the year all thy menfolk must present themselves before the Lord thy God. When thou offerest living things in sacrifice to me, the bread that goes with them shall not be leavened, nor shalt thou leave the fat of my victims unconsumed till the morrow.
Adam, can you just read it again? I like hearing about this fat consumption.
Knox has made an interesting like change. Because in the NIV it reads, the fat of my festival offerings must not be kept until morning. So he's changed.
And Knox says, nor shalt thou leave the fat of my victims unconsumed till the morrow.
Well, and you know, this really speaks to something that's fascinating to me, this sort of like animal nature god that's present in this Old
it's
Testament.
Very pagan.
Right? Yeah, it's my victims, not, you know, not the holy sacrifices that thou bringeth unto me, my victims.
Yeah, it's pretty metal.
I threw this great bread at you in the desert, and now you're going to bring me victims.
And you better eat all their fat.
Yeah. Which is nice. He leaves all the flavor for the I guess the priests, right? That's who would be consuming it. So
I guess so. I guess that's why the priests get fat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like these rosy-cheeked Sanhedrin or whatever they're called, right? They're eating all of this delicious gravy.
It's in the law.
Yeah, the brown victim gravy.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have to suck the fat. It's in the holy law. Oh, this is verse 19. The first fruits of thy land must be brought to the house of the Lord thy God. Seeing a kid in its dam's milk is a rite forbidden for it's a right forbidden thee. This is the first kosher stuff, right?
I guess the first fruits of thy land must be brought to the house of the Lord thy God. Seething a kid in its dams. Yeah. That'd be like you can't fry in
mother's milk.
In butter.
It says do not cook a young goat in its mother's milk.
Which is why you can't have meat and cheese together if you're keeping kosher. This says, though, the asterisk said, the reference seems to be a practice connected with local superstition, of which we have record elsewhere. So this version just taking a big old shit on kosher practice.
Well, and I do love that, you know... The reference seems to be a practice connected with local superstition, of which we have record elsewhere.
We got it somewhere.
So like, you know, we're not going to bother to really go to the, but it's there. Don't ask me another question about it.
This is verse 20. And now I am sending my angel to go before thee and guard thee on thy way and lead thee to the place I have made ready for thee. Give him good heed. I read it first as give him good head. Which, you know, the angels aren't strangers to wanting to be fucked in the Bible. People are horny for the angels. Give him good heed and listen to his bidding. Think not to treat him with neglect. He will not overlook thy faults, and in him dwells the power of my name. Guy sounds like an asshole. If thou wilt listen to his warnings and do all I bid thee, then thy enemies shall find an enemy in me, and those who shew thee no mercy shall find me merciless. So this angel of mine will go on before thee, leading thee on to the land of Amorite and Hethite, Perizzite and Canaanite.
That's Canaanite, yeah.
It's just spelled differently than I'm used to seeing it. Hevite and Jebusite, and all these I will destroy.
Well, I do love, right, so the last time, right, we covered all of the sort of bureaucratic placeholder gods. And so now he's sent down a nice middle manager, right? There's the manager angel who's overseeing everything. And also, when you have to sort of interface with these other corporate entities, the Amorites, the Hethites, he's just going to fucking destroy them.
He's going to wipe their cities clean.
Yeah.
We just got out of a story where Moses had to keep his arms up in the air. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
to keep the battle winning.
Yeah.
And his buddies had to hold his arms up in the air.
Yeah. I cannot tell you how many roles I've played where, like, that's what it feels like. It's just, oh man, I cannot wait to drop my arms. No, somebody is yelling at me like if I drop my arms, a whole bunch of people are going to die. So I guess I'm just going to keep them up.
I did Tim Robbins play Arlecchino.
Oh yeah.
I was just in the background. I was like, you know, in white face and just a background character, but would have to hold my arms up like that, you know, for hours. I noticed people at the Actors Gang all have just really developed triceps. it's just from holding arms and trees in strange positions.
Well, you know, what that really reminds me of is doing Suzuki Method with Matt Chiarini, right? When we were both little babies.
Little baby boys.
Little rosy cheek baby boys having eaten the sacrificial fat. You know, With this angry, small, bald man just not allowing us to move, but to hold these extremely tense positions.
In my first day of college, I found myself standing on top of Steve Helms' feet. He was lying on his back, you know, with his legs in the air, and I was on top of his feet. And that man yelled at me, "Drink your tea, motherfucker!" What? And he meant that I was supposed to pretend to sip tea because he was in control. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I know that feel of the arms burning.
Yeah.
My acting career reached such heights that a friend of mine sewed padding into my pants because I had to sit on a hard bench on stage for 3 hours and not move.
Holy shit, man.
So she sewed a cushion because my ass was so sore. first was I on, Daniel?
You're on 24.
Yeah.
Thank you, fellers. Starting to get a sweat on over here without that AC blowing. Do not bow down to their gods and worship them, or follow their customs. Sweep them away and break down their monuments. All your loyalty must be for the Lord your God. So I will enrich thee with the bread and the water thou needest, and keep sickness far away from thy company. There shall be no unfruitfulness in my land, no barrenness, and I will grant thee a full span of days. That's his long life, I guess.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, he has just been talking about how he's going to slaughter untold thousands of people. So, you know, I guess it really must seem like a blessing. Oh, but by the way, everything's going to be plentiful for you, and also I'm going to let you live.
Yeah, you can live
Don't
for a
worry,
long time.
We got live a long life. We've even got rules in case you fall in a hole, and you'll have bread. You'll have cracker bread and water.
I do want to point out he's saying that nobody will miscarry. So meaning you'll
wait, what?
Yeah, he's saying that you all your babies are going to live.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, that's what the NIV the NIV says. No barrenness. Yeah.
Okay. Wow, that's wild.
What's nice about this is that Knox doesn't give that optimistic of a prognosis on it, right? Like, the NIV is like, yeah, and there will be no birth complications at any time. Knox is like, I'm just going to leave a little room for interpretation just in case something goes wrong.
Let's get back to people maybe burrowing under your house.
27.
This is verse 27. I mean to make the fear of me go out in front of thee, bringing destruction upon the whole people thou goest to meet, and all thy enemies shall turn thy backs before thee. I will send in hornets first to make cowards of the Hevite and Canaanite and Hittite before ever thou goest in. Holy fuck! That's fantastic.
He just threw cowards. He called them cowards in there.
Yeah. Got it. So you're going to go meet these people. God's like, they're cowards, and I'm going to send an army of hornets in to make them scared. Well, I would be. I'd be fucking scared.
Yeah.
That's... I did not know that was one of God's tactics.
Are they still following a pillar of fire at this point?
I do not believe so. I believe the pillar of fire is gone. We are post Mount Sinai.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, right, like a wave of hornets, and in the distance you see this giant pillar of fire, or like a sword wielding angel, and then behind that, this whole crowd of ravenously hungry ex-Egyptian slaves. That does... I would turn heel and run. Yeah. I'd be gone in a minute.
I would definitely turn coward.
29, verse 29. Only I will not drive them out before thee all in one year. That would make a wilderness of the land, and the wild beast in it would multiply to thy harm. I will make them yield little by little. I will make them yield little by little before thy onset, so thou wilt have time to increase and populate the land.
Oh, so God's working on like his animal husbandry at this point? Is that
he's playing the long Age of Empires game here.
Yeah.
He doesn't want the land to just be overrun with like panthers. Or whatever is out in the desert.
This is sort of how I feel when I play Civilization online for hours on end during this isolation period. Is, you know, I'm looking at the people of, you know, normally I like to play as Russia or something like that. And I'd like to look at the Russian people and say, I shall give you the technology 500 years before anyone else, so that thou might drive them from their homes. But only city by city, piece by piece.
Merciful God. This is verse 31. The frontiers I give thee are the Red Sea and the Sea of the Philistines, the desert and the river Euphrates. All the inhabitants of the land shall be at your mercy, and I will drive them out before you. We got another asterisk over here by Euphrates.
Yeah, I'm looking at that bad boy.
Does it just say this line causes wars for hundreds of years to come?
The frontiers indicated seem to represent the southern, western, eastern, and northern frontiers of the Jewish territory in that order, the upper reaches of the Euphrates being north of Syria. Pretty much, yeah. I think that's what it's saying.
This is verse 32. Thou shalt make no treaty with them, nor with their gods. They must not share thy territory, or they would persuade thee to commit sins against me by worshiping their gods. No doubt, no doubt of it, they will ensnare thee.
So my question is, does God acknowledge the existence of these other gods then? Saying, assuming that the Israelites, right, are able to make treaties with those gods. And we know that he's got lesser gods that he's put in charge of, the people's commissar. But these other gods, do they exist?
That's a question that we've asked before. Yeah. We don't know.
I think we're falling on the side of right now. This is not a monotheistic religion. It seems like the other gods exist. Like God seems to, he seems to treat other gods as real things he has to, interact with.
Mm-hmm. So like he interacts, and their falseness is that they're liars, I guess.
One example came up when, I believe in Egypt, and I may be conflating this, but there was a time where God literally beat the Egyptian gods, meaning like the Egyptian gods, maybe he was working through the magicians or something during the plagues, or I forget how exactly it went down, but he was stronger than them. He didn't like beat them, but like
it does read that the priests of Egypt were able to recreate some of the plagues. It wasn't no tricks. They had lesser gods doing that shit.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, and I remember from some reading, right, because there are a lot of different Baals, right? But one of them, or Moloch. Moloch is the one who likes to eat babies. He asks people to offer him babies as sacrifices.
Wait, what?
This is one of these other gods, right? The Moloch. I think he was a Babylonian god. Don't quote me on that, though.
I know he's a character in Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah, he's also a character in Watchmen. So who knows, right? And he's a character in Howl by Allen Ginsberg. But Moloch likes to take young child sacrifices, and so it's nice that the Yahweh, right? He's like, I do demand child sacrifices, but you can give me a lamb or a cow instead.
Wait, he hasn't clarified that yet.
Well, he hasn't yet, but he will eventually, okay. Right?
I don't know, man. Well, I'm thinking we've been fucking up, and I shouldn't be alive right now.
Yeah, again... sacrificing mental health, I think, is a nice stand-in.
I do agree that Adam shouldn't be alive, though. That is something that I think
I'm glad we agree on something, Daniel. Maybe we can agree on how to rate this chapter. I'm giving it 2.5 stars out of 5. There's way more repetition here than I'm comfortable with. Like the first half of this chapter is all shit we already know. So I'm pretty disappointed in it. The saving grace is a swarm of wasps, the weaponized wasps of God. That's sick.
Yeah, that's
all I got.
That's biological warfare, right?
Yeah,
absolutely, it is.
You know, I remember in that class I was talking about we had to hold or we had to put God on trial as one of our classes. We had to prepare court cases. And
that's why you got excommunicated.
We did. I remember now. Find him. I was part of the prosecution. And we did find him guilty of genocide and biological warfare. He had he'd crossed the lines of the Geneva Convention a few times.
Well, this is evidence to that argument. Yeah. So you got to give it some credit for that.
I think I do agree with you, Adam. I know history of this podcast. Adam gets very frustrated at repetition, and actually, just as a podcast as a whole, we were hard on a couple chapters that were just like, I feel like there were like five chapters in Genesis. We were just like, God damn it, like this sucks. But no, I agree. I think this is a 2.75 star chapter. What do you think there, Maddie?
I'm giving it one star on the moral standpoint. Crimes against humanity are not cool, man. And so this angel of mine will go before thee, leading thee onto the land of the Amorite and all these other poor fuckers, and I will destroy them. Sign me out, man. I'm not on board.
Hey, you know what? I'm dropping down to one star too, so we can give a double flip of the bird to Exodus 23.
Yeah.
Get out of here with that mess,
get
God.
Get.
Matt, do you have anything you would like to plug or just share with our huge audience of listeners?
Well, you know, since last week, I have been thinking about it. And, you know, my roommate and I do spend a lot of time playing Free Civ Online, which is a website that provides, you guessed it, Civilization for free. And we'll do it for about 5 hours at a time. And there's a lot of talking that goes on. And we are going to try to learn how to Twitch stream it. So, you know, just keep an eye out for something about Civilization with Reverend Duncan and the Wolfman. Who knows? We'll be in the next round of pandemic by the time that actually happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that sounds fantastic. And we might actually be in the next round of pandemic by the time this episode drops.
Yeah.
So if you update me, if you're streaming in time, hit me up. And if you are, it'll be in the description of this episode.
Hell yeah, the link. Man.
You know where to find us heathens. We're on Hosted Pod, on Instagram, on Twitch, at Gmail. Send us those emails. Once again, we are back on a one-a-week episode schedule. Daniel, it was too hard to do two episodes a week.
Yeah, that's too silly. That's too silly of a thing to do for no money. But you know what, also it gives us time because our other projects and our other things to do will be better. One of these days we're gonna break into the YouTube world with videos and whatnot.
Are we?
Yeah, we're gonna do it. I've already, you know, it's mostly for Lightning Hot because that's the show everybody likes, so but it gives us time to work on those things. Not that I was spending much time anyways on anything, but yeah, it's gonna be fun.
Hell yeah. Well, Matt, once again, thank you so much for being on. You were a fantastic guest. I hope you'll come back in the future.
Oh, I'd love to, man. This has been a lot of fun.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.